I like, speaking of, let's, if we're going to play the background game, by the way, look at Will. That is.
I was just telling him.
Four-peer attorney strong.
Yeah, just like Main Street lawyer right there.
Oh, big windows, lots of wood. You should have some books. Where's your law library?
It's over there.
It's Fort Pierce. Is it just a menu?
I mean, like, original documents here are in this old walk-in vault. This is the old Scott Gore's bank. It's badass. I mean,
that's
like,
awesome.
Swing this door. I bet the door, if you took it off, weighs 400 pounds.
That is super cool.
Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
You don't gotta love the pipeline. I mean, you'd say, do I love the pipeline? No, it's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in my butt right now. But do you understand what it will do for our economy? Do you understand why we need it? That's really got to be how we frame this argument. You know, as Walt will say, like it or not, you know, carbon intensity scores are probably here to stay. The consumer cares about it, and the government does what the consumer wants them to do, and the government is mandating that.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
And welcome back to another episode of South Dakota's most listened to political podcast. That's right. Once again, it's time for Dakota Town Hall. Also this week, Jake, as Jake in the East, this is Murdoch in the West. Jake, this week we're also broadcasting live on The Cowboy in Rapid City. So we're expanding our reach a little bit into the broadcast world.
Yeah, look at us. Really getting that West River coverage we need, right?
Syndicated, if you will.
Syndicated, yeah.
You know, maybe there's a radio station out there you want to pick this show up. We'll make you a deal.
Well, this week we have a great guest. We teased it, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe last week.
Yeah, we plugged him wrong. It was, but I think I accidentally said he was going to be on last week, right?
Yeah.
Or my bad.
But it is our House Majority Leader and a good friend of the show, Representative Will Mortensen. Will, how you doing?
Good morning, fellas. I think most of the people you talk to are from East River. I am by about 400 yards West River, so I'm on Team Murdoch.
Atta buddy. That's where you want to be, Will. That's where you want to be. Come on, Mort.
You can drink for an extra hour in your area of the town, right?
That's right.
I'm so glad I'm maybe a little later than I should be in life, but finally mature enough to usually not fall for that unless, like, Jeff Partridge or Kent Peterson's talking me into it.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in, you know, it drives me nuts when we work late in the legislature, and I always tell people it's not just in Fort Pierce that bad decisions get made after 8 p.m. We really shouldn't be legislating after 8 p.m., but, my law office I'm sitting in right now is at 32 East Main Street. It's about a block and a half from the grade school that I went to, which is about a block from the Hopscotch, which is a club of
what's that place?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I don't have a real cannon for an arm, but it is literally a stone's throw from where I went to kindergarten.
That's I've never heard a more Fort Pierce description of Fort Pierce in my entire life.
I like how they named it like a child's game too. Hopscotch.
Hey, many a legislative juggernaut as far as bills has probably been through that building.
I would imagine.
We should change the subject. That's not why I wanted to come on.
No.
Fair enough, sir. Fair enough.
Well, Representative Mortensen, where should we start? Which are your bills and which are your projects is hot on the menu today?
You know, I had a pretty busy day on the floor yesterday.
You did.
I pitched a bill that created a state public defender office, which is one of the, you know, this might not be as scintillating a topic or something that's burning up the blogs, but it's the product of really good process. A lot of times people come burning in because they find a bill that happened in some other state or they find some hot topic that can get a lot of clicks on Facebook. This state public defender office is just something that's going to help us guarantee everyone's Sixth Amendment right in a lot more coordinated way. It's going to save the county some money. It was brought through the summer. We met, half a dozen times at least. A group that's led by Neil Fulton, who's the dean at the USD Law School, and Mike Day, who's a really sharp and cool guy and a judge out in the Black Hills. And it's going to, you know, provide the very poorest South Dakotans with a little bit better legal services. And that's a group that doesn't have a lobbyist and doesn't honestly get that many wins in the Capitol. So I was glad we delivered one for him yesterday.
I wholeheartedly agree, and because it's such a hard topic, especially in an election year to take up. Is this the topic that Chris Carr put a term limit on?
Yeah, he put a term limit on the commission. I mean, we're setting up a board to oversee this state public defender office because you can't just have it overseen by the Chief Justice. This person is going to be arguing to the Chief Justice. You can't have that be their boss. So there's a separate citizen board that will oversee this. And I agreed with Representative Carr. I mean, there was no term limit on it initially, which these boards are not like a plum ticket. And so, you know, people not wanting to be on them anymore is the natural term limit. But, you know, a 12-year term limit, I think, is just fine. And so Carr can get his the fingerprint on the legislation as it goes by. That was fine by me.
I can't think of a board I've been on for 12 years where I'm thinking, yeah, I'd like to do another 10. You know what I mean? Like, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's the old Norm MacDonald joke. It's more like the B-O-R-E-D.
So, you know, you and the topics that did get the blogs a-clicking was maybe you and your buddy Rick Weiland having to square off a little this week.
Yeah, I think that's Jake's buddy.
I think
that. Yeah. Guy and Toby,
Jake's
right?
Buddy yeah. Oh, my Jake's buddy is Toby.
No.
All fair. You know, we had, and honestly, hats off to Rick Weiland for showing up and trying to defend the measure that he's pushing. I think that a number of committee members, probably most poignantly Representative Rehfeld, found some real flaws in the ways of pitching this. I mean, just, I can't tell if his, if these are unintended consequences. I mean, if he's taking an absolute battle axe to a lot of the safety standards that have been in place for decades, if that's intentional or unintentional, I honestly couldn't tell from the hearing, but, you know, whether you consider yourself a black belt pro-lifer, blue belt, yellow belt, whatever, I mean, everybody should be resisting this right to abortion being put in the Constitution. It says you can't regulate at all in the first trimester. So what kind of regulations do we mean? You can't require that this be a healthcare provider that does this procedure. I mean, think about any other procedure you do, and it's like, oh, doesn't even have to be a nurse. Doesn't have to be none of it. Doesn't have to be done in a hospital setting. I mean, I don't know if they intended to do that or not, but that's pretty clearly what the language of that measure says. And if the public only has to rely on campaign ads and press conferences and whatever, you know, it's hard to get it straight.
Well, I mean, that's true.
What
for,
the language means. So
that's true
I
for all
pretty
of our
proud
topics.
Of that work in there. And I don't know if Rick did himself any favors by coming, but I was glad he did.
Well, even if you're pro-choice, it seems like it's something that's not a very favorable amendment for you. I mean, because it's not reasonable to have no regulation at all in the first trimester. It's not, even if you're pro-choice, you believe in, like you said,
you know,
having
how,
a doctor do it.
It's so annoying how you guys make me be the Alan Combs of this show. But I think okay, so let's say I'm not the black belt on Weiland's side, but maybe the blue belt on Weiland's side. I don't know. I've never met Rick Weiland in my life, I guess. So I don't know if it is intentional or not, as you said. But I think the middle of the choice side, which is, you know, due respect, about 60% of the country would agree with everything you're saying. But the extreme, as Will said, the campaign ads and the mailers are defining this argument. And I think that's hard on both ends.
Well, I think it's just a bad measure all around. I don't think it's well written. I mean, if you are pro-choice, it's a poorly written measure for your viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, ACLU and Planned Parenthood said they don't like it.
Yeah, I can see that too.
A couple of Democrat colleagues say, we're not really for this. I mean, they don't like the way that Rick Weiland has done it. And, of course, these folks they're solidly pro-choicers, and they don't like it. And so it seems like Rick Weiland is maybe the great unifier of everyone thinking this measure is totally inappropriate for the state.
accomplishing the near impossible, bringing pro-life and pro-choice people together. That's what's odd about it.
Also, I think Pat did the pull quote. Maybe that's where I saw this on DakotaWarCollege.com. But the ACLU dude had a real unfortunate line about Weiland's crew, Dakotans for Health, is ran by three white men. Just like, oof, that hurts a little, guys. Come on, well, optics, come on.
And if you keep reading, I believe the ACLU person in charge of it, isn't that someone that dated one of Rick Weiland's kids previously? Is it something like that too?
Well, it's South Dakota. You can't. That's just what happens in this state.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's we have enough headaches within the folks in our tent when we're fighting with each other and trying to grapple around that it's occasionally fun to grab the popcorn and watch them do the same thing.
Every once in a while, we get that.
Well, I do like that you're the voice on your end of it, Mr. Speaker. I think, you know, even I think you're a good representative of, I think you both are actually a modern representative of that argument or side of the debate. I think, yeah. I think it's the way to go, even though you're better.
And I'll just, you know, one thing, a lot of people don't like talking about abortion for the obvious reason of this is just kind of a terrible circumstance on everyone's side. There's some real tragedies for the life stage of the gal who might be considering this, and so people just don't like talking about it. But I knew this measure was coming up, and so about 9 months ago, I just resolved to read as much as I could from various different viewpoints on this, and really try to drill down. Not, you know, what does some platform or party boss try to tell me how I should think about this, but how do I think about this from a fundamental perspective? I mean, there's certainly some of my, you know, religious views come into play. I don't profess that anyone else should have to hold my religious views or something, but they do shape the way I think about it. So I took a long time, and I just got to tell you, Murdoch, the life on its way deserves some protection of the law. There's just no doubt about it. I think we can argue over maybe the level or when that right accrues or that protection should be made firmest, but that life is worthy of protection of our laws. It just is. And so, it's in conflict with, you know, some interests, well, not some, but I mean, some interests the mother has in these, but you can't really have this debate if you don't acknowledge that there are two interests at play, I don't think. I think you're doing a disservice.
I couldn't agree more.
I agree 1,000%. I also think, you know, the style of American debate of how we, you know, it's one of the unfortunate byproducts of the peaceful transition of power is some of the stickier topics have to take time through precedent and court cases, and you know what I mean, and this isn't an issue that anybody has the patience for on that, right? Like, you know, you look at some of the European solutions for this, and it's not near as, you know, no one's going to war over it as much, you know what I mean? And like, I don't know, it just seems like an easier
Ireland
fix.
Is more pro-life than we are, aren't they, Jake?
Is Europe, is that what you're asking?
Ireland, there's certainly exceptions
into the Catholic, you know, heart of the world. I'm sure it is a little bit more conservative, you know what I mean? But even in Ireland, it's not as like a, you know what I mean? No one's hating each other over it, you know what I mean? There's less signs and there's less, you're a butthead because of this.
Yeah, on the pro-life side, you do need to have some compassion in it too. I think Will stated that very well. I mean, there are circumstances. I mean, right now in our current law, it's only mother's life. And I think we really need to consider rape and incest. It's currently not in the law, but I know it's a very, I agree with Will. It's, no one wants to talk about it because it is not a fun circumstance to talk about.
That elf in the room, three dudes just yapping on about this right now. We should all, you know, keep
and
that
in mind.
You guys
want to get together next Friday morning and talk about abortions more?
Yeah, I'd love to. Can we?
That's
every
exactly
Friday
what I'm
morning.
About.
We should. Then we could talk about abortion and child marriage as well.
Let's talk something way more exciting, pipelines.
Let's change pace.
You and your good friend over in the Senate, Casey Crabtree, leader of the Senate, both sponsored three bills, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Sponsored three bills on the pipelines that went through committee. And we got Drew Pearson's view on those and kind of the idea behind them. But you had a pretty successful run at it in committee.
Yeah, and then off the floor yesterday, we got both 1185 and 1186 out. You know, when Casey and I approach this topic, we approach it pretty darn differently. Last year, we were kind of the leading voices for each side, and we successfully fought to a complete stalemate and killed each other's bells and got nothing done for anyone. I mean, our laws didn't get more certain, more rational, more figured out. Landowners didn't get anything. I mean, I tried to clarify, and we had a conversation on this podcast about who should get the right to eminent domain and who should have to run these things in rights of way. And I haven't changed my position on that. I mean, I do think a project like this should be in the reserved right of way that we have across this whole state. It might cost the project more, but you know, eminent domain should really be something we reserve for pretty special cases. The Senate just doesn't agree with me on that. I mean, that law is not going to change, and I acknowledge that. And so I think it's my job to figure out what I can get done for the landowners to try to reduce the incidence of eminent domain as much as I can. So the best way to do that is to make them want to run to the courthouse to sign up for easements, because the terms are so fair and so beneficial to them that, you know, forced condemnation is as unlikely as, you know, and as rare as it can be. And yesterday's votes were a huge step for that. I mean, those two bills would have gotten massacred in the last 10 years, virtually any other year. But the legislature's got a lot of these issues brought to them. There's a lot of attention and a lot of energy. And a lot of that's frankly due to some of these legitimate landowners. I mean, actually these farmers who are just saying, I was just having a cup of coffee and then I got this thing dropped on my lap and now I've had to hire attorneys. And so, I mean, they brought a lot of energy to this. And I think that those actual farmers deserve credit for that. And so to get these two huge landowner wins off the House floor yesterday was incredible. I mean, it just, I'm still kind of marveling in it. I think these are great. If we get these or something that looks a lot like them through the legislature, it'll be the biggest win landowners have had in decades in that building.
Well, I got to commend you and Casey here, the compromise you guys came together on. Like, it's truly impressive that you guys were, you're right, leading voices on the opposite side of the issue. And then, you know, after a year of talking and really getting information out there, you guys came together and passed some great legislation. It's impressive, to say the least.
Yeah, well, in case, you know, there's a bill in the Senate that Casey's been a little more the captain of that gets to the certainty on the local government side. And I look at it as, I'm trying to defend landowner rights as against the project. I'm also looking to defend landowner rights as against the government. And when governments come in and put in regulations that are unreasonably restrictive, way too onerous, you know who they're harming is private property owners. I mean, that's really, Casey's bill kind of stands for that. And people who want to block this project because they don't like the politics of it, I mean, I said it on the floor yesterday. I just view government getting in the way of otherwise legal, you know, free enterprise and this thing being kind of borderline immoral. I mean, that's just not what government's for. We saw Joe Biden do that to TransCanada, and that was bullshit. And
nice.
So we're going to have any unit of government come in and just say, now we'll make this illegal, whether it's state, county, township, you know, federal. That's the same way. And so if we're going to protect actual private property, encourage free enterprise here, we got to have a system that will do that.
All right. So, I mean, with Casey being the prime sponsor in the Senate, are you feeling pretty confident about its path going forward?
You know, it's going to need to change forms, I think. I think everybody kind of acknowledges that. I amended the two pro-landowner bills we just passed a little bit in committee. You know, I got to tell you guys, I've never worked on a project quite like this where there are so many stakeholder groups involved.
Yeah,
no
like
kidding.
20 different groups with different little ways they look at it, from incumbent utilities to ethanol is different than soybean, is different than the cattlemen who just have, you know, landowners with on the way along the route to, of course, Summit, although I'll be honest, I'm not really negotiating with them. I'm, you know, it's really difficult. And so that each one of those groups would like this to look a little bit different. And so I imagine there'll be some changes that come to that Senate Bill 201 before it gets to our House floor. But I think the sentiment is one that's pretty broadly held.
Just threading the needle, huh?
I don't know. I mean, like I tell my leadership team this all the time, this plan might not work. This might be a dumb plan, but it's a plan. We're going to try.
Well, you know? You got a harder lift on the House, too. Senate's a little easier to govern, you know, due respect.
Yeah, I mean, they're all just tightly under the thumb of Casey Crabtree and Lee Schoenbeck. You know, free will over in the House. Everyone's their own man. Merry band of misfits, all just trying to do some good in this crazy world.
I believe my dad refers to it as a well-oiled machine over in the Senate.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Although I think this year he would appreciate the machine of the House compared to previous years, or at least last year's.
Before they get done patting themselves too much on the back, they did let the Democrats' tax plan get to the floor. You guys just go ahead and ask me if that shit would ever happen in the House.
Well,
fair enough.
So, okay, I got a question for you.
That's one text from Lee. That's one. Lee text counter is at one so far.
I want to know what bill you tried to... this year that you have anything fail yet? Have a bill go down yet?
I got to tell you guys, I fail about every day on something or another. But that's okay. One thing, I mean, everybody takes losses in that building, which is kind of what we were just talking about, frankly. So nothing that I've prime sponsored, and I try to keep my bill load pretty low. I mean, I've got, I think only 4 bills that I'm the prime sponsor of this year. They started in the House. And so those have all gotten out of the House. I'll send over some vehicle bills. But, you know, I've also been working really pretty hand-in-hand with the administration and with the Aggies to make sure the foreign-owned ag land bill is done in a way that really accomplishes the governor's goals and my goals, which are pretty darn aligned on this topic, actually. I thought that last year the mechanism she proposed was not terribly good. But to their credit, they went back to the drawing board, came up with a new mechanism, and I vetted it hard. I mean, I'm in Fort Pierre. I'm an ag business attorney, and so I vetted it through ag groups and tried to find things that weren't disruptive to the way we do business here, but that made sure that was an effective ban. And so I've been working pretty hard on that one. That bill doesn't have everything in it that I want, but I don't view that as a loss. I mean, that's just how that goes. It's probably the same with these pipeline bills. They're not, if I just got to write these, they'd look a little different than this, but that's, I don't really count that as a loss, you know?
If on the foreign ag land ownership stuff, how much of that is, like, you're an attorney, so that I think I'd ask it, I think I'm asking a lawyer question.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't any kind of foreign ag bill going to get kind of federally litigated just because that's a little complicated between the...
No, I don't think so. One thing about it is that real estate law has always been in the firm province of the state. The state is the primary law setter when it comes to real estate law. So what this bill is doing in terms of the restrictions on foreign ownership of ag land is that it's expounding and really strengthening the restrictions that we've had in the books since the 1970s. And they haven't been struck down. I mean, there's Arkansas has got some of these laws in place. And in fact, they enforced one of them and made a Chinese company divest of some, you know, of some real estate last year, I believe. So these are valid laws, and they're going to be a lot more effective when we get this bill done.
I can't wait till season like 10 of Dakota Town Hall. We do a deep dive into real estate law. I can't wait for that.
Well, if we get down to that.
On the floor yesterday, I had a member ask me what an option agreement was, and I just went full prairie law professor for like 5 minutes on the floor. A couple people came up to me afterwards like, you know, I just never quite knew what that was. I really appreciated that part. Like, well, there you go, you know, the more you know.
People love the history lesson.
Hey, man, it's our new summer podcast from Dakota Town Hall, Prairie Law with Will Mortensen. That's not a bad show, really. Think about some of the interesting cases you could come up with.
You probably could. You really could.
Dakota Town Hall will be right back after a quick word from our partners.
Rapid City Business Journal, a weekly show from Home Slice Audio, focusing on the business topics inside of the Black Hills, in partnership with Elevate Rapid City and Home Slice Audio, hosted by Leslie Lane and Shiloh Francis.
And now back to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's premier political podcast.
Hey, who did the House bill? Is it 1228 with the hot pink hunter gear? Are you in the middle of this? You know what's happening here? This is awesome.
Oh yeah, I know. This is a Representative Jess Baumuller thing. She is, you know, I'm going to throw the men in this too. She's probably the preeminent hunter in the House of Representatives. I mean, Orrin Lesmeister shoots a lot of coyotes, but I bet like days hunted / hunting prep / you know, I mean, she's not quite to Russ Olson levels where it's like 200 days a year he's hunting. But Jess Baumuller is a legit hunter, and so she's bringing that bill there. I can't remember what independent body basically said that hot pink was just as good at being eye-catching as blaze orange, the contrasting against basically prairie landscape. So anyway, it would be as effective for encouraging safety. And so she's like, let it rip. I mean, there's never been a more Jess Baumuller bill than that one. And
I mean,
so, here she comes. It's awesome. I think it's cool.
It's hot girl hunter summer. I love it. This is awesome. It's Barbie field dressing fall, baby.
Yeah. So where did this bill land? Like, where is it at right now? I don't know anything about this bill. I missed this one.
It hasn't come to the floor yet. I, you know, given that it's 1228, it's one of the last 50 bills introduced. And so I would say it's probably likely to be in committee this week if it's still alive.
Yeah. Well, is that all the heavy lifting? What else we got to do today?
Will, you got 3 Cracker Barrels this weekend, you said?
Yeah, I'll be in Oneida this afternoon. I got to tell you guys, those Oneida, I was in Highmore a couple weeks ago. In some of these smaller towns, the Cracker Barrels are just awesome.
Oh, yeah, like they're better.
10% of the town shows up.
Yeah, Rapid City Cracker Barrels kind of suck, but like smaller town Cracker Barrels are fun.
Yeah, because again, I mean, you go there and there's the chair of the school board, and there's the guy that runs the grain elevator, and the guy that owns the hardware store, and the banker, and then here's two. I mean, it's a real cross-section of town where you go to Pier, there's 15,000 people here, and 40 show up, and they are, like, hot on you on the most niche issue you've ever
right.
heard.
Right. Like, that's a little – these bigger communities, the Cracker Barrels is a little bit more like, you know, it's a ding-dong harvester a little.
It's an activist crowd, not a generalist crowd. Like, they're not worried about the major matters of state. They're worried about like this one
weed
thing that they're there to be in.
Abortion, weed, guns, elections.
I mentioned pipelines is a lot of discussion God. At those right now.
Oh yeah. I mean, when we go to Oneida, I think we'll be there for 2 hours straight. I bet we'll talk pipelines for 1 hour 15.
Well, that makes sense in Oneida.
I mean, I could talk pipelines for like 4 hours. It's just a topic that I really feel like I'm the man for his time and place on. I've done easements for landowners for like years. It's one of the areas of law I've got a lot of just technical expertise and practical experience in.
You know,
so when we're going in to write these things, I'm just right in my personal wheelhouse, you know.
You know those podcasts you can listen to like go to sleep? Maybe that's the like go to bed over pipeline contract law with Will Mortensen.
There's a renewal term easement for 50 years.
Right,
the option of the easement holder.
It's immediately out. Out like a lion.
In bed with Mort. You know what I mean? We could be having a little fun with it.
That reminds me, when I bring that up. Mort, do you remember, calling you Mort, do you remember the dead cat thing?
Oh yeah.
Whose cat was that?
It was my family's cat. It was okay. We had an outdoor cat named Mort who had died.
Was that Pishky?
And we're talking about you, right? And then all of a sudden that gets into committee. There was some complaint that my dad was talking about a dead cat, but it was talking about, you know.
I think it was a Pishky thing, wasn't it?
No, it was Freimuller.
Oh, that's right. Well,
it was Freimuller. I was calling Freimuller a dead cat, but we were talking about. Yeah.
Speaking of, anyway. Did you see Pishky put out a bill trying to get like weather control under wraps? Good God! Well oiled machine, my left foot. Lee, show him back.
It died in committee. It got 0 votes in committee. It fell flat dead. That's a good oiled machine.
You know, just because I live in Fort Pierre, I just got to tell you guys. I think that bill was about cloud seeding.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I was talking to Tony Venhuizen about this or something 5 years ago. And we were talking about our earnest predictions for like what is going to cause the extinction of the human race? Like, what is the most likely thing that would do that? And my answer at that time was something like, these pointy-headed people at Harvard are going to be like, hey, we need to block out the sun or start doing this to affect the climate, and they're going to just totally mess everything up and send us into an ice age and kill everyone. And so I guess, does that throw me in league with Tom Pischke? I kind of think that's what it's about. It's like,
I think
not the house tamper
with the ecosystem. So I guess I'm not saying I'm voting for that bill. I'm certain I'm not a co-sponsor. Put me down for Pischke sympathetic on the climate engineering.
So this one made out of a House committee onto the floor is what you're saying.
Also, trying to throw in Pischke with some Harvard grads is a real leap, due respect. Sorry, Tom. Come on, man.
I think he's anti the climate engineering. I haven't read the bill. Not a co-sponsor.
Fair enough.
Oh, you don't need to write the bill because it died in committee.
I'm just saying that made the notes. You know what I mean?
It did.
That was a real house style bill in a Senate committee.
We are the House of Representatives, and we're representative of this population. We're not going to apologize for that.
Well, I'd like how you defend them. So you don't have to. You don't have a choice. You know what I mean? You got to work with them.
I love them all. Some of them hate you. I honestly love them all. No, it's true. You have to. You got to work for all of them. You do. I mean, if you don't show good faith to everybody in there, then you're not doing that job. I sincerely believe that.
That's why.
Well, it's you're the leader.
Yeah, well, that's kind of it, but it's a little bit like how there's 27,000 people in this district, and a bunch of them didn't vote for me and don't want me to be in this office, but I have to represent them too. And it's the same way in that caucus. A bunch of those people didn't want me to have this job, and they might not personally like me, and they might think that I vote terribly or whatever, but, you know, when they have an input in this caucus, and when they set their feet and we've got a collective position, that's the deal. We go do it.
Speaking of election questions, I forget if we have your best burger on record. Who's got the best burger in South Dakota?
Ooh, in South Dakota.
Keep in mind it's an election year and you were just in Oneida.
Yeah. it's not the bakery in Oneida. That's a nice place for a lot of different reasons, filled with fine folks. The best in Fort Pierre is probably the Silver Spur, which is Kitty Corner. It's right over there.
That's a good burger.
That's a good burger. I mean, I don't know if they keep the oil in longer or what, but it's got the just right thing of like how McDonald's burgers used to be when they would allow them to be full fat. They still got that going on in Silver Spur.
Man, and even your burger answer is a rancher answer.
Yeah.
Fair. What is it gonna, what else is it going to be? That's pretty good. Yeah. Well, hey, man, you want to stick around for new candidate roundup?
I don't know. It seems like I saw a press release yesterday that got a clap back on Twitter right away. So I better stick around for at least 5 more minutes to see if we can get through that.
I couldn't help myself. Sorry, Jake. I wanted to be the first Dakota Town Hall Facebook comment. Let's start there. It is New Candidate Roundup, the favorite new bit here on Dakota Town Hall. And if I may, we'll start with a young up-and-comer in District 2. Just shy 80 votes last time.
Shut up.
But he's back with a vengeance. No, I had a bunch of jokes for this, but like in all reality, Jake and I met under such strange circumstances. We didn't really know each other. And then through Zoom, week by week, we became pretty good buddies. And like, as we sit, we're doing a political show and obviously we're going to have a little fun with it. But like, boy, you sure meet a lot of people who really kind of want to be in this realm. And after a while, you start to get a feel for who are, you know, faking it because they want to be in the ring and people who just kind of want to do some good. And I know he's my co-host and obviously I'm not going to say shitty things about him. But like, I can't think of somebody who is a more apt representative of what I think the modern new Republican Party should be. And if Jake doesn't win in District 2 this year, it is a shame. So please donate to him and, you know, I don't really have any funny. It's just nice.
Well, thank you, Murdoch. That was very nice of you. I appreciate the kind words. It's going to be
that don't get you
a couple months.
I got a
81.
I got a couple of texts asking if you were gonna stay on the show. I'm like, are you kidding me? He's gonna if he's the governor of this show, he's still gonna be on this thing every week.
I mean, I have already set my ship sail on this show, so I'm not backing down now. That's for sure.
So there's District 2. Who are you running against? Anybody?
Yeah, I did see, and we never set this announcement. I was actually looking to see if he announced, but there was no pressers on it. John Sharda did announce for re-election. I saw on his Facebook.
Okay.
So he is running. I have not seen Call announce for re-election, but I'm assuming he's running. So it looks like a three-way primary at the moment. I have not heard Call isn't running. So,
well,
three-way primary, and just a bit of a rematch. I've done
another
guys before and
showing again. Beck power grab.
Yeah, I really should be dogging on the house in that previous segment.
Yeah, no kidding. Now you're going to be part of the problem.
You love them all the same. You love them all the same.
Speaking, go ahead.
Well, did Matt Roby, he filed this week, I think?
He did file. Know. Yes.
Yep. Is that, Roby, where's that? District?
Oh, that's one of the best districts in the state. That is District 5 of Watertown, South Dakota.
That's okay.
You fell right into that one.
Should have known that was coming.
No, Matt's a great guy. I've spent a lot of time with him.
Districts in this
good
state.
Shot. Good shot. He's been hunting with him. It's a good shot. Better than me.
Long as we're in the house, I saw that Yankton Representative Mike Stevens is going to try to get reelected.
Yeah. Mike's very good in the education sector. Definitely knows his chops there, as well as other places as well. But
if I'm thinking of the right Mike, he's in the Irene area. Yeah?
He's from Yankton. He's lived there for, I don't know, 30, 35 years.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe in my head he was the northern ag version of that district, maybe. But maybe not.
No. He's an attorney there and just a hell of a nice guy. I mean, you talk to him and this guy just like oozes integrity. You know, I don't make quite as many snide jokes as you guys do just in my life generally. But every time I do in front of Mike Stevens, I immediately feel bad about it because he's just one of those guys. He's just every bone in his body is a good, wholesome, earnest bone, and he's a heck of a good guy. He was on that school board for 15 years. That town loves him.
All right, there's the Wilmore bump.
He's currently Speaker Pro Temp, and I would guess probably planning to run for Speaker next time around because Hugh's done. And unless you're, you know, usually for Speaker Pro Temp, become Speaker unless you're John Hansen, but he gets the way it goes.
One thing about Mike Stevens is that he's such a fundamentally fair guy. I don't think he even had any competition last year in running for that pro tem spot. He's a pretty universally respected fella.
Well, we had Representative Tyler Torsten on. He's saying high praise of Mike Stevens and specifically Mike Stevens' bow ties as well. I know you have that new up and coming caucus. You know, it's the Wild West in the house.
Caucus.
Competing caucus against your Republican caucus, the bow tie caucus.
We just don't need divided caucuses, sub caucuses. That's just bad for juju. So, you know,
I don't think you should
sub caucuses.
You seem like a bolo tie kind of guy. Could you do a bolo tie with your rancher stuff?
Oh yeah, I mean I've got several of them. One thing that's a little bit of a bummer in my personal style is that I have a fundamental objection to wearing a hat in the Capitol. I just think that's
I'm with you.
And so I'd like to wear a cowboy hat more often, but what it means is that then I need to go home and get my hat and then come back to the event and I'm like changed. And I don't like going to it. So anyway, I don't get to wear the cowboy hat as often as I want to.
You could dress black hat it if you want, but, you know, still in the Capitol. I don't know. I'm with you. Yeah. You know, my grandma get mad.
I'm with you. I got to log off and get ready for another meeting coming up, but keep doing good work.
Well, that is our majority leader of the state house, Will Mortensen. Good friend of the show and a fantastic legislator.
See you, fellas.
Thanks, Will.
See ya.
You know, your buddy Toby had
not my buddy Toby.
Had a long week.
Dumpster fire Toby.
Oh,
yeah,
my
decided
God.
That he in and out like a flame.
Turns out, I'm not trying to say I told you so or anything, because
I know. I knew this was coming.
You know, perhaps somebody called this on this show weeks ago.
I knew this was coming. And you're going to be like, oh, I told you we shouldn't invite him on the show because he's not going to be an actual candidate. Maybe just, he's your buddy. You knew what was going on in the background.
Oh, no, please don't get that rumor started.
No. Oh, yeah.
Pat, actually, just because this is basically his podcast blog, I read that Caroline Woods was behind the curtain, speaking of his inside camp.
I don't know who that is.
She was like, you know how these people, they're like, you know what I mean? They're with, like, it's a constant contest to be harder and harder right.
Sure.
They're one of, like, that's a group that kind of ruined Family Heritage Alliance. I guess is what we're going to call them. Anyways, who else is running, buddy? We said Matt Robia.
Robia, he announced way back when.
Okay.
And he just finally got stuff, not finally, just got stuff filed. I haven't had mine filed yet. So he's filed. There was this weird thing with Thomas Werner.
Oh, is this the precinct committee thing? Yeah.
Yeah, but he's also running as he's currently on the file as a GOP precinct person, but is running as a Democrat senator for District 15.
Where's 15?
It's a great question. I think it's from the Sioux Falls area. I always forget that one.
Well, Republicans can be Democrats, and Democrats can be Republicans in Sioux Falls. Cats or dogs, up is down.
Yeah. Work for Steve Colbeck.
Yeah.
I love Steve. That's it. I'm going to give straight shots to Steve.
Cousin Steve. That's the text I'm going to get from Cousin Steve tomorrow. Go. All right. We both made the list. That's good.
He's got a Cracker Barrel tomorrow, I'll be at, so I might get a little... get a little shot from him there.
Dodged emceeing a Cracker Barrel this weekend. I got a note from Garth at Elevate. He's like, hey, want to do this? Like, I've been, not really.
Like, I've been insulting those people for like weeks.
It's less about that. It's just more, I don't know. Cracker Barrel crowds bum me out. It's stressful on my fiber of the fabric of faith in this country.
9 a.m. on a Saturday, I'm getting up and going over to Brandon to listen to.
You have to.
Representative Senators.
Part of
I know.
The deal now. You guys be in the beach.
I'm not there for anything. I just go there and watch, you know? I just meet people, right?
You don't lob hand grenade questions in?
Yeah. Right. Why'd you vote that way?
So, I guess not really an announcement since he's already announced, but I got a note from Mike Derby asking me to swing down to his campaign offices that he opened up in Rapid City.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming important to be out there in District 34 more and more.
That's unique. Not a lot of people have campaign offices for legislative races.
Yeah, that once in a while you'll see it in Sioux Falls, and like you'll see it in muni races, right? Like Rapid City Mayor, like Sioux Falls Mayor, Aberdeen Mayor. But district race is pretty new. That's a pretty big. That's a call to Jordan Youngberg. Hold my beer. I see your truck wrap, and look at my office.
Jordan's got his mobile office, and
Is that everybody running?
I think that is. People are just too wrapped up in session to announce re-elections right now, I think.
We'll leave all the breaking shadows and news to next week if you're not in the loop.
Yeah, I don't have too much interest in talking about that. That doesn't sound very fun at all to talk about.
I mean, yeah.
just to keep taking everything off Pat's blog and now and using our voices instead of reading it, He did do some cool analysis on kind of urine reporting about how much money consultants take out of all of these.
I started seeing there's more of an effort to like showcase how much is going to consultants during ballot issue campaigns.
Like right, this Dakotas for Health, for example, like every 90 cents on every dollar went to consultants. So like, that's crazy to me. I mean, I get you need to hire people to do work and stuff like that, but 90% of funds raised are going to consultants on that.
The American Family for Family Families is another one of them too. I'm getting the name wrong. I'm just, it's a both sides kind of problem. I guess let me be the lawyer for the other side, Jake. Especially on an issue that I think a lot of this state disagrees with, especially like with Weiland's bill, for example. Like maybe not the bill, but the topic. I would like to separate the fight from the debate a little, right? And like, well, of course, Roe v. Wade's money is going to be traditionally outside money. That there's no one in the state that, There's 11 elected Democrats in Pierre. Again, I've made this joke 1,000 times. There's more homeless people in Pierre. So, like, of course, some of those is going to, that's going to look a little funny. You know what I mean? Since the deck is a little bit politically stacked against them on the argument. I don't know.
And you got Light Defense Fund, which is the other side of it. They that's 57% went to consultants. So you're going to have a lot going to consultants, but I mean, and the question is who used their money better, I guess, right?
And then I would also remember the scale of these, right? Like I agree consultants in politics can be gross and is a dangerous thing, and you got to watch. I agree with everything that, like, what Pat's saying, but, like, you just, you know what I mean? Like, comparatively to other states, this isn't really a problem. You know what I mean? You just see, mm-hmm. see what the consultants banged out of Florida in the last 18 months and maybe, you know what I mean? Just remember it's a scale. Like, there's a lot of interesting changes happening in our ballot issues. I don't know. I'm a little split on it, I guess.
You know, in the open primaries, they had a ton of out-of-state money, which isn't surprising by any means.
Maybe that's the better example, right? Is, like, it just because it's necessarily out-of-state money doesn't mean it's evil. You know what I mean? Because I don't necessarily think that's one that's putting anybody on a defensive position immediately. Weed and guns and abortion, everybody's dug in on that side already, right? Like, everybody mm-hmm. has a side, and everybody, you know, isn't going to wiggle much.
I do think this out-of-state money on the open primaries leads some credit to the whole argument opposed to it that's going to cause basically more money being dumped into these races.
I do agree that. There's a fundamental.
It doesn't help.
Yes.
It doesn't help them. I think that filing says, okay, yeah, we're, like, mostly out-of-state money running this. Not mostly, but a lot.
And then remember, like, you know, it costs so much money to get these things on a ballot because you need signatures. And signatures don't just show up, and you got to pay people to go get those signatures. And when there's one ballot issue coming up in November, that might cost a couple $100,000. But when you're going after the same type of people that are trying to get signatures, that might now cost double or triple what it used to. In the same sense where if you look at, use a Sioux Falls municipal race for an example, it used to cost 30, 40 grand to run for Sioux Falls City Council. Now it's well into the six figures. That translates down to district races, your race into county commission races now mean more than they used to because of the development funding, so those races are getting more expensive. That, I think, is in and of itself a giant problem.
I agree. And I think that's about all the jokes we got for the day, don't you think?
I think so. Who's next week? You know, next week, Jake, it'd be a good week to have the administration on. Maybe Ian finally wants to dust off his microphone and come on in.
We haven't heard from them very much this session.
I mean, we haven't heard an administration viewpoint of the budget, and she signed, I don't know, what did she sign, 40 bills this week into law?
A ton of bills signed. We didn't talk about that. She signed tons of bills.
You know what I mean? So maybe next week's Gnome Week.
And I think it's about time we have another segment of Hot Goss.
Hot Goss! That's right.
Hot Goss.
Okay, next week we'll get some reports back from, or completely ignored, from Ian Fury. And when that doesn't work out like we want it to, we'll bring on Hot Goss and we'll talk. You know, I want to talk to him, by the way.
Yeah?
A little bit. I've noticed the Dakota Scouts increase in what I would say performative political interviews. I want to talk to Austin.
Sure, he'll love that.
We get dramatic tease. All right.
Well, if I can do one plug in, this is the only time I'm ever going to do it.
Please do.
Schoenbeckforsd.com. That's Schoenbeck, SchoenbeckForsd.com. If you want to learn more, donate, go there. It's the only time I'm going to say that because this show is not about it.
You know what? That might be the only time you're going to do that, but I'm going to do that every week until you win, buddy, because I can do whatever I want. You got to be cool.
You can.
No, Schoenbeckforsd.com.
Yes, the easiest thing to spell in the world.
Another Schoenbeck Powergram. For Jake in the East, I'm Murdoch in the West. We'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes are available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to dakotatownhall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Ty. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler and website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors do occur. For corrections, please visit dakotatownhall.com. Hosted by Jake Schoenbeck and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice audio production.